Welcome to Think Digital, Act Human, a podcast from the Department for Education, where we tell the everyday stories of digital specialists working on extraordinary projects. I'm Adobe Evangel. Now, in our previous episodes, if you've listened to any of our previous episodes, we've had guests from the content design world, we've had service designers, we've had an associate product manager. So all these kind of digital experts talking about how they do their work. But this episode, we've got something very special for you. We're going to talk about where that work gets done and why that's important to even consider. So with our guest today, I usually have a cup of coffee, but today I have a cup of soup. So it's a very special pod. We've got our guest, Jack Collier. Welcome, Jack.
Hello. Thank you for having me here.
Do you want to tell us what it is that you actually do? What's your official title?
Yeah, sure. So I look after service design and digital delivery for our services that we deliver to schools and school business professionals. So those are the people behind the scenes that make a school run perfectly. And obviously, we want our services that we deliver to those people to run as easily, as quickly as possible.
So when I first started, you were my deputy director. Is that still your official title, or have you moved to something else?
I am still deputy director. That's me, DDJC.
That sounds great, except I'm getting DD Jesus Christ.
Oh, God. Definitely not that.
Never mind. Let's move on. Right. So what was really nice, what I kind of liked about you, Jack, is that when I first started, it feels like every episode I'm saying, when I first started less than a year ago. But seriously, when I first started less than a year ago, you were one of the first people to contact me. And you said that, you know, you were deputy director and you set up a meeting to meet with me. And I'm thinking, wow, like the deputy director of the Department for Education wants to like have a meeting with me. And then I find out that there are actually quite a few deputy directors.
There are tons of us.
What is it that you're all doing? How come there are so many deputy directors?
So it's a good question. There are a few of us. Basically, we look after different parts of our operations within the DfE that we're delivering to users. So I'm looking after, as I said, the services that we deliver to school business professionals. We've got deputy directors that are looking after services that we deliver to teachers or services that we deliver to vulnerable families. So it's a huge set of things that we're delivering, which is why there's so many of us.
Okay, so something that you have been working on relatively recently is the future ways of working for digital and technology, which is like the part of the department that we work for. What does future ways of working mean exactly? What is this remit?
I mean, future ways of working is very much present ways of working now, to be honest with you. But really what we mean by that phrase, future ways of working, is how the ways in which we're working are changing in this new context. So I think we, in the workplace, across every sector, are kind of standing on a bit of a precipice, a doorway into a whole different future in terms of how offices function, how we use physical space, how we use virtual space. And there are two paths that I think you can go down. You can design that consciously, how you use that space, or you can kind of stumble forward and work it out as you go, maybe unconsciously and not necessarily think about the decisions that you're making. The reason that we consciously set up a piece of work called Future Ways of Working is because we wanted to think about the way in which we work in a design thinking kind of way. So a user-centered design approach, an agile approach, and really consciously step forward into that new world and think about how we approach this new context.
Now, this was not a top-down approach that you took. And so we're both saying the word approach quite a lot. We're going to notice this now because we keep speaking. But you did decide to really involve like the staff who are going to be working in that space. Can you talk about like why you decided to do that, how you decided to do that, and what you found out?
Yeah, so we are a user-centered design organization, right? Runs right through our DNA. And that, I think, means that it's got to carry through everything that we do. And what better way to do that than to take the user-centered design approach and apply that to how we want to work? Because the way which we design we want to work is all about our staff, and it's all about our people and their potential and unleashing that. So what better way to understand how to do that than actually go and talk to our staff and understand what their pain points are, what their problems are, how they perceive the world, the things they're worried about. And so what we did was we went and spoke to people. We had a brilliant little team that really, really poured their heart and soul into trying to understand staff's perspective. And that's helped us shape what we want to do going forward. I should say as well that, you know, we're not just designing around what staff want. Instead, we're trying to think about that within the context of our organization and where we're trying to be. DfE is on a change journey. It's been a very, very policy focused organization. And we in digital and technology within DfE are trying to push ourselves more towards a service oriented organization. And you can imagine space and environment is very different in those two different kinds of organizations. And so yes, we went bottom up. We went to try and understand what staff wanted and what they felt and what their pain points were. But we also have this view in our mind of where do we want to get to in the future? And how can space and environment, virtual, physical, and ways of working that wrap around that really help us to get there?
So what were some of the things that you heard that were surprising? Like, what were some of the things that stood out for you after you did these surveys and these kind of like town halls and those sorts of things? Like, what did you learn?
Yeah, I think two things that really stood out to me. One was that there is no consensus. There is no way to please everyone. Everyone wants something slightly different, which I thought that was quite surprising, actually. And it really does show the power of user-centered design, because I thought everyone would share my point of view of what, you know, what do we want in terms of ways of working? Actually, everyone has almost a completely unique set of things that they wanted out of the future.
Well, hang on a second. What is your point of view? What did you think?
I wanted a very radical change to the way in which we work. I wanted to think about office as a base for community, collaboration, play even. Maybe even that we don't need a permanent office footprint. Maybe we could think about hiring the space that we need when we need it. I think that's, you know, future thinking stuff. Maybe that's too radical for where we are now. But, you know, everyone's got different contexts. And so you might be, for example, fairly vulnerable. And so you're just not up for traveling. And so working from home and making sure that virtual first is embedded in everything we do is really, really important for some people. Other people that we know within the team, for example, moved city in order to join the DfE. They don't know very many people here, and they really felt like work was going to be a social place where they could get to know new people. And so coming into the office was really, really important for them, and working in a collaborative way in a physical environment was really important to them. So you can see there's just a huge spectrum of different views, and there was no consensus to kind of work through that and work out what do we do in that situation. I think the other thing that I found surprising from the survey was actually one of the questions we asked was, do you trust the leadership within DfE to deliver on this? And I found it surprising that the majority of people said, yes, we do. And I think that's quite unique within a large organization, that you have a fair degree of trust in leaders.
Okay, so from what you said, I'm hearing kind of like two sides of this coin, right? We've got this world where people have spent, you know, 18 months, almost 2 years, whatever, working not from the office. And then it's a question of, are we going back into the office? Are we going back to the before times and like using the office space regularly through the week? But then the other side of the coin is, what exactly does that office look like and how does it work when we do go in? So like, I've been following what some other kind of like big tech companies are doing. I mean, like, it's October 2021 as we record this. And, you know, we've heard like Microsoft say, we're basically not going to put a time frame on when people were going to come back in. And then you've got like people in the tech side of banking saying like, we want people in as soon as possible. Like, coming back into the office pretty much full time is where we want things to go. Whereas the Department for Education's official advice is, we do want you in like 2 to 3 days a week. That's kind of right, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, so certainly there is, I guess, an official line around how many days in the office we would like people to come in. But beyond that, you know, it is a empty vessel around how we design then the office to be useful and productive for people when they do come in, and how we create the environment, virtual, physical, for people to work, whether they're in the office, at home, or anywhere else. I think it's really important to kind of pause on a little point, which is that over the course of the pandemic, the makeup of our teams changed quite significantly, in that beforehand we had a base in London and we had a base that was growing in Manchester, and we had two very clear kind of areas where we were growing our workforce. Over the course of the pandemic, that changed quite dramatically, whereby actually we've been recruiting across lots of different locations, including Sheffield and Coventry, for example. And most of our teams are now based across different locations. So it's very easy to get hung up on how many days people are in the office. And actually, the design challenge for us is, how do we design an environment that allows people to work from different offices together or different locations together? Because teams could be based in multiple different locations. And there was massive benefits for us to do that during the pandemic and continuing it now, which is that by doing that, we can offer people better learning experiences because they can join different kinds of teams that match their learning needs. So, for example, I was able to send an apprentice to go and spend time with the apprenticeship service, which is based in Coventry, and he was based in Manchester. He got loads from that experience because it's such a mature digital service, got to work on loads of AI, for example, and with mature software teams. We wouldn't have been able to do that in the physical environment the before times. The other thing is that we were able to assemble the right skills to solve the problems that were in front of us. So rather than just kind of say, we've got this problem and this team needs to solve it, even though it might not have the right skills, we were able to say, actually, we need this person, this person, this person, because they've got the right skills to solve this problem. And that was actually vitally important, I think, during particularly our pandemic response, when everyone was at home and we were able to assemble teams with exactly the right skills that we needed to solve a problem without having any physical divides between people. So I think it's easy to get hung up on this idea of how many days people are in the office, when actually the design challenge for us isn't about that. The design challenge is, how do we create the environment, whether you're in the office or not, because actually our teams are across all different kinds of locations. The other thing I was going to say was that you started off this pod by asking me, what's my job? And it's really hard, that question, to answer, actually. I've got a job title, doesn't mean anything. I've got a set of things, which probably doesn't mean much to people outside of the DfE. Really, my job, as I see it, as a kind of senior manager within civil service, is to unlock the potential of our teams and support our teams. They're the people that are doing the real work, right? The people that are actually delivering for our users. Whether I like it or not, I'm not sat writing code, which is going to be released to our users. That's the role of our teams. So my job is to unlock their potential and get rid of barriers to them flourishing as teams. And one of the big barriers that you see in any organization, but you know, particularly now with this kind of confusing environment that we're in, is the physical and virtual environments in which teams have to work in. And if we can remove that, which is why I was so interested in this piece of work, I think you can get teams performing even better by building the right physical and right virtual environments for them to be able to collaborate and work effectively.
Okay, so let's dig into that a bit more. So we've got, you're trying to kind of like make lemonade from lemons and say, right, this is actually a chance for us to completely from the ground up reimagine what we want our work environments to be. If staff are only coming in 2 or 3 days a week, or maybe 1 or 0 days a week, what are they coming into? How are we going to use this space differently? And I happen to know, we have been given some money and some leeway to remake our workspace in Manchester. I don't know if this is happening beyond Manchester. Maybe that's something you're aware of. What is the plan there? What is the vision? What are you trying to do? I know you just said you were radical and you're thinking about collaboration spaces. So tell me the dirt.
Yeah. So I think the first thing to say is that I don't have the answers, and I don't think anyone has the answers for this kind of new world that we're stepping into. But that's fine, because for most of the things that we're working on, we don't have the answers. We're working on really complex problems, right? And that's why we've got this user-centered design approach and design thinking approaches, and we work in an agile way. That's exactly what we're doing with how we create environments, both physical and virtual. So what is the vision? Where are we going? Well, we've got a brilliant alliance. We've got a brilliant relationship with our estates colleagues, which I think is quite unusual in large organizations, actually. And I'm very, very kind of happy that we've managed to forge that. What we're doing is we're looking at space in Manchester and in Sheffield actually too, and thinking about what experiments we can run in that space in order to understand how people work in those spaces, what attracts people to work in the office and how space supports that, and what actually turns them off, makes them say, you know, the office doesn't support the way in which I need to work. So it's again about removing those barriers, but also creating the space that supports the kind of work that we want to do. So we want to launch a load of experiments with estates. And the thing that I always think about, I don't know if you've ever seen the film about the McDonald's founder.
I haven't, but everybody talks about this.
Right. I don't think it's a brilliant film, by the way, but there's a great scene where they essentially prototype up the restaurant space and they do it in chalk in a car park. And we're not in that world. We're not exactly doing that. But what we are going to do is we're going to look at bringing in things like modular furniture. So we can try different setups. We're going to try different technology in the space so we can see how that works when working across sites and bringing physical and virtual environments together. And we're going to be seeking feedback throughout this to understand how that works for staff and to measure it as well. Does it bring people into the office? Does it drive people away? And really just take that experimental approach to how we design that space. And that's what I mean about consciously stepping into this question of how do we work in this new world.
So would a Manchester colleague walk into the office and suddenly see that there are no desks, there's beanbags and like virtual reality goggles? I mean, I'm being a bit facetious, but like how regularly are you going to be doing these experiments and then analysing the results? Like, what are your measures for success?
So I think you've got to go back to that thing I said before, which is space, right? And virtual environments, physical environments, the whole thing, how we work, culture, very, very emotive. And people naturally jump to I really want this. I want virtual reality goggles, for example. And everyone's got ideas and that's fine. But you're completely right, David, with your product manager hat on to say, this is about what we're trying to achieve. It's not about the things themselves. And if we go back to that statement we made before around we and the DfE are trying to become more of a service organization, then the space has really got to support that. So how do we measure our team's ability to collaborate in order to deliver to users? Really good example of the kind of things that I'm talking about is if you were to go to a Citizens Advice head office in London, you wait in the waiting room, you sit there and you look at a screen, and on that screen you can see all of the digital interactions that are going on with Citizens Advice there and then. So you can see what are the top search things on Citizens Advice website, what are the top queries, for example. And immediately you enter this headspace where you understand what Citizens Advice does and what it really cares about, right? Because you can see it cares about those users and what advice they're trying to find. That's the kind of outcome that we're trying to achieve in the DfE, right? We want to see that stuff on walls. So we want to see TV screens sharing data about our services. Are they up? Are they down? Is there a problem? How many transactions have we served? What are users saying? We want to physically see that, right? We want spaces that support the ways of working that enable us to understand users better. So things like empathy labs. GDS have got a brilliant empathy lab in their London office because, you know, it's open. You wander past it and you are naturally drawn to it and you kind of step in there and you go.
And what is an empathy lab for people who don't know?
It's a space basically where you can build empathy with different kinds of users that might be different to you. So they might have visual impairments, for example, and you can try on goggles that might stimulate that kind of experience that they might have. Just having that in the space that you can wander into and experiment and explore with, I think sends a great message about the culture and environment that this organization has and therefore the kind of services that we're trying to deliver. So when we're talking about this stuff, that's the kind of North Star that we're trying to achieve. How can we curate space? And I keep saying virtual, physical, because it's not just about the office. It's about how do you work between different spaces that supports that culture and way of working, which really puts the user right at the center. And the thing that I'd add to it is that it's not just about how we use the space. It's about how other people can use the space as well. So that could be other teams that aren't digital teams coming into that space and understanding immediately what this team is doing and what it's achieving. And is it achieving success or not? You know, that would be a fantastic outcome. At the moment, we can't do that. We can't do that sat on our laptops, right? We can't do that if we're at home. It's very, very difficult. The other is actual users. I would love to have users coming into our space and for us to feel connected to the people that we're serving. And users for us in DfE is really, really expansive. But it's things like, you know, how can we support people to come into the office to get work experience? How can we support, you know, mums that might have taken time out of work to have children, for example, to gain new skills and go into different kinds of employment? So, for example, learning to code, something we've got coders on site. Why aren't we running coding camps for people that want to retrain? So there's masses of stuff that we could do, which actually brings our users to us as well. And I think kind of creates a more permeable barrier between government and the people it's serving. And again, when I think about ways of working, a space and environment, you can start to achieve some of those things. And I think that really drives the culture and ways of working that then teams inhabit.
So many interesting things that you said there. I'm still struggling to understand how we might measure the success of that objectively. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, so it's things like, do people enjoy coming into the office? Do people actually come into the office to collaborate and do the things that we expect them to do physically together, right? Do they spend time together? But I think there are other measures as well that probably aren't as direct, which are kind of these indirect measures. Things like, do we retain people better than we did before? You know, because people enjoy working together. People enjoy being part of an environment. It's those kinds of measures that I think we can start to build out from these experiments. I should say we haven't started these experiments yet. So they're due to kick off around November-ish time or towards the end of the year with the actual physical space.
The reason why I guess I'm asking about these kind of key performance indicators is because I'm imagining listeners who perhaps they work outside government and think, wow, okay, experiments in how we use workspace, that sounds great. How am I going to kind of measure whether this is working for us. And there's some really good stuff that you talked about in terms of retention, because it's so expensive to kind of recruit and train new staff members. And, you know, how many people are choosing to come into the office now that you've made these changes? What is the perception of the staff themselves about how much they're enjoying the space? I think you do have to be careful about sort of like surveying people out. If there are like several weekly surveys, everyone's going to be like, oh, I don't want to go in just because I have to do another survey.
I think just to build on that measurement point, Dobie, obviously it's a massive experiment in of itself, but that massive experiment is made up of individual kinds of experiments, right? So one experiment might be that we want to create dedicated user research space, that we want to soundproof a room, make it very private, be able to bring users in, or be able to do virtual research from that room. So we then want to build those measures out from that specific experiment, and that would be use of the space, whether more people participate in research as a result, so they get to understand users' perspectives better as a team. You kind of want to break this big experiment, ways of working, down into smaller bits and kind of be specific about what you're trying to achieve with each one of those specific things. The other thing I'd just add as well around this is that I think there's a massive opportunity to improve an organization's inclusivity and diversity by thinking about space and environment in this way. So one of the really exciting things that our estates colleagues are thinking about is designing inclusive spaces. So for example, spaces that work for neurodivergent people or people with neurodivergent needs. For example, lower lighting, quiet spaces where it's harder to be distracted. And I think that's brilliant and fantastic that we're starting to bring that inclusive design thinking into the way in which we design the space. And again, whether that be virtual or physical, because, you know, the virtual environment, it might be around making sure that everyone understands how to run a brilliant virtual meeting. Or if you're running a hybrid meeting, making sure that everyone in a hybrid meeting that is physically in a space together still has their laptop on and is logged into the meeting so that anyone who isn't in that physical space can still see them. And if you want to, you know, participate in that meeting, you still put your hand up on the Teams meeting, for example, right? So there's all kinds of bits and pieces that make this up, but putting inclusivity right at the heart of this is really important too, I think.
Brilliant. In one of our previous pods, we had the head of design, like content design, on, Jen Staves, and she talked about the importance of communities of practice, building up this sort of shared culture within particular disciplines. So, you know, it might be a community for product managers, community for designers, and that's sort of like this intra culture. But then there's also like this department culture, right? Like there's like a digital and technology culture that's been built up. And I've felt that as somebody who's very new to work in DfE Digital and Technology is surprisingly quite innovative, and people are kind of willing to just take an idea and run with it, which I really like. You talked about experiments and things like that. I'm just wondering how easy or difficult it will be to maintain that culture. Will it have to necessarily change? And before you get started with your answer, I can see the gears moving in your head already. Before you get started with your answer, I've got to say this. A few weeks back, I went to perhaps my second social at DfE, and it was like a Northern Sports Day. And like, we traveled out to like this particular site, Bamford or something like that, and there was just like all sorts of events. There's football, ultimate frisbee, rounders. I was looking forward to rounders so much, I can't even tell you. And then I was immediately bowled out, so like it was terrible. But anyway, how do you keep a culture and sense of sort of like rapport and camaraderie when people are only going into an office 2 days a week if they feel like it?
Yeah, culture is an interesting one. You mentioned different teams with different cultures, the communities with different cultures. You've got cultures layered on top of cultures, or layered on top of cultures, right? So we've got a D&T culture, we've got communities of practice, which I feel the beating heart of DfE Digital and Technology. Team cultures, you've got program cultures. It's a complex world and a complex environment. How do you keep a culture? I think for me, it goes back to what I said at the start about being conscious about it. First of all, culture's never stood still. It's always changing and always evolving. And I think every action that we take, everything we say, adds to, builds, or changes that culture. I think that's particularly true at a senior level as well, where I guess you've got more influence, more reach across an organization. But within that context then, and knowing that, thinking about how do you maintain or build the culture that you want, you've got to consciously design it. And things like rituals are really, really important in culture. If you think about any culture in a more kind of broad sense, you know, a national culture or what have you, rituals are often the keystone or pillars on which that culture kind of rests or kind of goes back to. And I think that's one of the key things that we really got to design. We've already got some great rituals, things like Show the Thing, where we invite teams to come and show something, ideally something that's not finished. It might be a problem that they don't know how to solve it, or a fun project that they want to share with people because they learn something from it. That encourages a culture of sharing and not having to polish things up in order to share them, actually getting feedback early, right? And it's a great ritual to kind of encourage that kind of behavior. So those kinds of rituals that we've got to think about designing and then putting in place that then supports the culture that we want to achieve.
Do those rituals always have to be work-related? Do activities like Northern Sports Day become more important then because we're not necessarily spending as much time in each other's physical presence?
No, they do not have to be work-related. I mean, people enjoy coming to work, definitely, because the work is exciting, it's interesting, you make a difference. But for the people, right? People say, come for the work, stay for the people. And so those rituals could be things like regular lunchtime socials, for example. So I think where I used to work, we used to have Falafel Friday, where we used to go out and get falafel from the market. It's great. It's like a nice little thing to do. But equally, before the pandemic, when we were physically in the office together, we used to have a Thursday wellbeing time, which was about 2 hours set aside to just get together a team and do some fun things together. I would personally encourage play at work because loads of research shows that that supports, you know, us to work better and supports us to bond as teams better. And so actually, I think there's loads of brilliant rituals that we already are doing and which we'll continue to build that support that.
Perfect. That is such a good note to end on. I'm just going to say thank you to everyone who's listened to this. I really hope that you've enjoyed it as much as I have. Thanks to our wonderful deputy director, our DDJC, Jack Collier.
Thanks for having me.
If people want to connect with you on social, do you have like a Twitter or is LinkedIn best?
Yeah, maybe Twitter's the best place. Unfortunately, it's not at DDJC. It's at Jack Coles. So yeah, hit me up on Twitter.
So if you, dear listener, have something you'd like us to cover in a future pod, please do let us know. Our Twitter is DFE_digitaltech and our blog is DFE Digital and Technology Blog. Honestly, just Google it because if I gave you the URL, we'd be here all day. It's really quite long. This pod was brought to you by the Department for Education. The producers are Rosie Roth, Louise Mullen and Nettie Williams. And I'm your host, Adobe Evatual. Join us next time. Bye-bye.